1 week after the confirmation of Justice Brett Kavanaugh, Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill wants the Supreme Court to review and potentially reverse a lower court's decision on Indiana abortion law. In April, the Seventh Circuit Court struck down two provisions of Indiana's House Enrolled Act 1337 as a result of the case Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky versus Commissioner of the Indiana State Department of Health. Don Johnson, former legal director of the National Abortion and Reproductive Rights Action League and a professor at Indiana University's Maurer School of Law, says that Attorney General Hill's timing isn't ideal, given how recent Kavanaugh's appointment was and Hill's own allegations of sexual misconduct.
Well, I think it's particularly awful that our Attorney General, Curtis Hill, is rushing to ask the Supreme Court to take away women's fundamental rights when he is working generally under a cloud where his own political party, the Indiana governor, has asked him to resign because of his highly inappropriate sexual misconduct with women. And so I think it's important for people to remember that this is an assault on women's fundamental liberties, and we need to think about it in that way. And we would not be at this point if the Republicans in the Senate had not politicized the last two Supreme Court appointments.
Part of the law Attorney General Hill wants reviewed prohibits abortions at any time, including before fetal viability, if it's for a particular reason like sex, a diagnosis of Down syndrome or other conditions, or race, color, or national origin of the fetus. The district court ruled that these non-discrimination provisions violated a woman's 14th Amendment right to privacy, which has been used to cover a woman's decision to terminate her pregnancy or not since 1973 with Roe v. Wade. In the appeal filed last week to the Supreme Court, Indiana's counter to the non-discrimination provision being struck down is that not regulating these abortions results in, quote, eugenic manipulation. Hill's appeal argues that the abortion rate for babies with Down syndrome is climbing with technological advances in genetic testing, and also expressed concerns over sex-selective abortion. The provision sounds like other anti-discrimination policies, but Johnson argues that the language of the provision makes it particularly offensive and extreme.
It is disguised as a civil rights statute. It targets the core of Roe v. Wade by banning a woman's right to make her own decision early in pregnancy, by banning certain reasons, and it is really trying to disguise that as a civil rights statute by banning abortion for reasons of race, sex, disability, national origin. It has a whole long list that tracks civil rights statutes. But really, it's going to the core of Roe and taking away from women their right to make the decision protected under the Constitution based on their own personal, highly private reasons without examination by the government.
Part of the discussion surrounding this provision was that the state would be prohibiting abortions prior to viability. The Supreme Court has repeatedly held that women are free to choose abortion before viability for any reason or for no reason at all, the district court argued. And this provision would place an undue burden upon women seeking abortions. Another part of the law, on the disposal of aborted fetuses, was also deemed unconstitutional. The law would have required that aborted fetuses be either buried or cremated. The district court ruled that provisions surrounding disposing fetal remains must be related to legitimate government interests. Johnson says the law clearly doesn't meet that mark.
So the fetal remains provision is yet another in a long series of restrictions designed to make abortion more expensive for no strong governmental reason.
The state argued that the humane disposal of human remains is a legitimate interest, but the Seventh Circuit upheld precedent and said that an aborted fetus isn't a person. Because a fetus isn't a person in the eyes of the law, they don't have constitutional rights, as Johnson explains.
Embryos from the moment of conception and fetuses have not been viewed as the equivalent of persons under the Constitution or under other forms of law. It's just very dependent on the context, but under the Constitution, the Supreme Court in Roe v. Wade clearly ruled what was recognized throughout all time in U.S. history, that it is not the case that embryos and fetuses have constitutional rights. If they did, that would go way beyond giving the government the ability to restrict abortion. It would mean that the government could regulate wide range of actions by women during wanted pregnancies on the theory that a pregnant woman is actually two people under the law.
In a press release from Attorney General Hill's office, he says, quote, "Nothing in the Constitution prohibits states from requiring health facilities to provide an element of basic human dignity in disposing of fetuses. These tiny bodies, after all, are in fact human remains. Even if fetuses aren't human, the state then points to law surrounding the disposing of other non-human remains, like slaughtered horses, as reasons to uphold the provision." This appeal to the Supreme Court comes 1 week after the controversial appointment of Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Many legal experts think that Kavanaugh would lean towards restricting the right to abortion if given the chance. During Kavanaugh's confirmation hearing, he said that he understands the importance of the precedent set forth by Roe v. Wade. And in his 2006 confirmation to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, he said he would follow Roe v. Wade faithfully and fully. But in the 2017 D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals case Garza v. Hagen, concerning a 17-year-old unauthorized immigrant's right to have an abortion while in government custody, the court ruled to let the girl have one the next morning. Kavanaugh, however, objected in a dissent, claiming that the decision was setting a dangerous precedent of encouraging government detention to obtain immediate abortion on demand. Johnson says that the new composition of the Supreme Court doesn't look good for abortion rights in the country, and that the Indiana law in particular could be used to contest the core of Roe v. Wade.
The status of Roe is in danger. It's, I think, more likely the court will uphold increasing numbers of restrictions on abortion without expressly overruling Roe, at least until faced with a case that forces the court to confront Roe itself. I believe, though, this Indiana law, it's not like a chipping away. This is like taking a sledgehammer to Roe because it's flatly inconsistent with the fundamental liberty of a woman to decide whether to continue a pregnancy or not. It's fundamentally inconsistent with that to say the government gets to list the reasons for which an abortion will be permitted. That's taken us back pre-Roe to when some states required women to go before boards of men, doctors typically, and explain why they were seeking an abortion and get the board to approve that particular woman. That is the kind of scenario that this Indiana law evokes, where the government says, we get to decide. The woman doesn't get to make her own private personal decision. We get to decide what's a good reason for having an abortion, and we have to approve that. And so that is really striking at the core of what Roe protected for women. So it's particularly offensive and demeaning.
The Supreme Court receives thousands of petitions to hear a case a year, and less than 100 are granted. As Johnson explains, there's no real way of guessing if the case is going to go to the Supreme Court or not.
It is impossible to predict whether the court will grant this request to hear the case. The Attorney General of Indiana is arguing there's a split in the circuits, and it's really important to have direction from the court. In fact, the law at issue is clearly unconstitutional under the last 45 years of well-settled Supreme Court precedent, so I don't see a reason for the court to take the case. But with the newly constituted court, with Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, it really comes down to, in part, whether they're looking for a way to restrict abortion rights.
For Attorney General Hill's request for the Supreme Court to review the case to go through, four justices have to vote upon granting the petition. For WFHB, I'm Annie Aguiar.